we're gonna need to see economic weakness. So that's number one. I don't think we're gonna go melt up. So I think you only really have two scenarios here. One is the trading range, which is worst case for us. And then the other one is the breakdown, which is what, fingers crossed, that's what we get. And basically you would get the end of the bull market. And if the bull market ends, then the fear trade will ignite and have to roll it over into the reason why it's good for us. So interest expense is, last year was $1.1 trillion. Historically, it's been $300 billion or less, which has been very manageable. Now, at one point this year, they're targeting $1.3 trillion. And it's going to be around there. $1.3 trillion is a problem. It's a problem for the bond market. It's a problem for fiscal. Then you have the combination of that. So we have two big problems, which are supporting gold prices here. One is that interest expense. Everybody knows it's a problem because it's impacting the budget.
Don DeRay, good afternoon to you. How are you, my friend?
Hey, Andy. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, anytime. And as we were saying off camera, it's been a couple months since I saw you, and it was down in Florida. I don't know how, that was about, six, you know, so, but it's good to meet you in person.
It was in September, so 3 months ago, October in Rivers.
It flies, doesn't it? Wow. So, but I wanted to get you on to get your rear view mirror thoughts on 24. And then if you could talk to me about that, and then let's talk about this recent sell-off. You could even call it a mini crash that we've had since 1st of November, and I used it as an opportunity. But what are your thoughts on that? And then we'll go into what expectations and scenarios in 25. So go ahead.
A lot to talk about. Since it's year end, I guess we can talk a little bit about what unfolded in 24. It was really all about the stock market being strong. The S&P 500, you know, it kind of dictated, you know, what gold and the miners were going to do all year. And I've been saying this prior to the year that the miners are not going to run without economic weakness. And the reason why is historically, the miners really only have done well in the 70s when you had economic weakness, a couple of serious recessions, energy crisis. And then the 80s and the 90s, the economy did well. You know, Reagan kind of kicked it off in 82, and it ran from 82 all the way to 2000, and gold and the miners did terrible. And then the next decade from 2000, so you had the dot-com bubble pop, 99-2000, you had a recession, then you had 9/11, which created a recession, then you had the great financial crisis, you also had the housing bubble pop. And so the 2000s, you had economic issues, and the miners did really well. And then since 2011, we've had 14 years now, 13 plus years, of a stock market that's done nothing but go up. The S&P went from the bottom. 2008 was 666. We can call it like 650. And today it's at 6,000. That's almost 10x, man. And so when people are making that kind of money in stocks, the last 2 years, stock market was up 24% last year. I think they're up 24% as we speak, which is kind of crazy. Back-to-back years of 24% growth. And so we haven't had that economic weakness. And so from gold and silver standpoint, yeah, physical gold's done fine, but silver really hasn't caught up. Like, all-time high for silver in 2011 was $49 in 2011. Here, forget about 1980, but if we just look at 2011, 49, and here we are sitting today under 30. So the silver hasn't really performed to help the silver miners. The break even for silver miners is about $27. So the margins right now is about $2. It's just, they're not doing well. So that's kind of, and a lot of the gold miners have silver mines. So that's held the miners back to a certain extent. And then the gold miners, they have good margins, but nobody wants to own them because they got Wall Street doesn't want to own them because they're making so much money on the stocks that they think are low risk. Listen to Jeffrey Gundlach on Wednesday. He was saying, you know, I might buy some risk assets, right? So it's like nobody wants to. They don't consider a lot of these guys. They don't consider like Apple or Amazon as a risk asset.
India.
And so if that's this, their mindset, it's like, I'm not going to buy any miners because those are really risk assets, right? So this year's been a tale of a strong stock market. So next year, heading into next year, I'm hoping that finally this bull market ends. Now, there's a couple scenarios here. I'll go ahead and go into them right now.
Yeah, go ahead.
Scenario number one is the stock market doesn't crash and the economy doesn't take off, but it muddles. But it does good enough that we basically stay in a trading range. Say, let's say 5,200 to 6,200. And that's the worst case scenario for us from the gold miners, because if the stock market doesn't get below 5,000, that means you don't have a crash. 10% is 5,400. So at 15% to 5,000. So if you don't go below 5,000 this year on the S&P, you're not going to ignite that fear trade, that uncertainty trade that we need. So we need stuff to break. And so scenario number one, well, there's three scenarios. One is you break out, you keep melting higher. You go like David Hunter, you go all the way to 7,000. And even in that scenario, the miners aren't going to do well. I'm just telling you. And they might do okay, but they're not going to do what we want them to do. Because the only time, again, we're going to need to see economic weakness. So that's number one. I don't think we're going to go melt up. So I think you only really have two scenarios here. One is the trading range, which is worst case for us. And then the other one is the breakdown, which is what, fingers crossed, that's what we get. And basically, you would get the end of the bull market. And if the bull market ends, then the fear trade will ignite. And have to roll it over into the reason why it's good for us. So interest expense last year was $1.1 trillion. Historically, it's been $300 billion or less, which has been very manageable. Now, at one point this year, they're targeting $1.3 trillion. It's going to be around there. $1.3 trillion is a problem. It's a problem for the bond market. It's a problem for fiscal. Then you have the combination of that. So we have two big problems, which are supporting gold prices here. One is that interest expense. Everybody knows it's a problem because it's impacting the budget. And so simultaneously, you can't cut that. So the budget's the problem. So if you try, the other problem is fiscal dominance. Now, what fiscal dominance is when the government is supporting the economy through spending. It's this fiscal spending. So they're spending out the yin-yang, like the $2 trillion deficit, supporting this economy. If the deficit was only $1 trillion, we probably wouldn't have any growth. So all our growth is being printed through debt. And Trump's going to have a hell of a time because if he cuts spending, he's going to undermine the economy, the economic growth. And he can't really do anything about that interest expense because he can't get interest down. Because they're basically rolling over these bonds at 4%. Because short-term interest rates are going to stay at 4% this year. I mean, that's kind of what Powell told us on Wednesday. Said, Hazari, I can't help you on short term. In the long term rates, no one's going to be borrowing 10, 20, and 30-year bonds because of inflation. And so there's these massive headwinds for the economy, and believe it or not, for the U.S. government's solvency. It's like, how in the world do we fix this debt problem? And we've never, I'm going to finish with this. We've never even considered fixing the debt problem after the year 2000. Now, Newt Gingrich in the 90s, he tried to fix it. And in many respects, he had it fixed. We had a balanced budget in 98, 99. Right. And from 2000 forward, we never even thought about fixing the debt problem. We expanded debt from 2000, I think it was $5 trillion, and now we're at $36 trillion. I think even lower than $5 trillion in 2000. Today, we're at $36 So we basically never even thought about fixing the debt problem. It's always been a non-issue. We just expand debt, expand debt, expand debt, expand. We've never even thought of fixing the debt problem. Well, guess what? Now we have to.
Yeah.
That's where we're at today. We're at today where we have to do something about it. And we're kind of in denial. So it's like the rubber's hitting the road now.
Yeah, if we can work out on a little bit more, and man, you said a lot, had a lot of great points there, but work out really the interest, like where interest rates are going, or I should say where they're not going to go. They're not going to go below, you mentioned 4%, and it looks like that's going to be the case. I'm going to tentatively agree with that. I don't see that happening either. So that has huge ramifications for the broader market. Right. So that's where you're getting your thesis. And I'm agreeing with your thesis that we should and could get a sell-off there. But can't the Fed or the Treasury of easing in buying bond to push down interest rates?
Actually, no. If you think about it, the only way that you really can get interest rates lower is to get the dollar lower. So how it's kind of a catch 22 scenario here.
It really is. I want to work it out more.
Right. There's no easy fix here. You can't just say, oh, we're going to lower rates because they've said they're not going to lower rates. So lowering rates isn't really a possibility here. He's pretty much said, I'm going to fight inflation unless they fire Powell. Now, if they fire Powell, the next guy comes in and says, I don't care about inflation. I just want to get the rates lower. So I'm going to cut rates. You can always cut the short term, and if you cut short term rates, that's going to lower the dollar. And they can't do that, but they're going to have to fire Powell to do it.
Yeah.
But the way to get the dollar down is to cut rates, which they said they're not going to do. So now it's like, how in the hell do we get the dollar down? It's not going to be easy because everybody else is cutting rates around the world and the U.S. isn't. It's pretty ironic, but Europe has lower 10-year bond than we do.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Italy has a lower 10-year rate than we do.
That's crazy because
it's like 2%. It's like crazy. So since they have we have higher rates, they're like, oh, we'll just buy the U.S. bonds, and that's keeping the dollar up. Now, the one thing you can get the dollar down, which I'm expecting, is a recession. But they don't want a recession. But if they cut spending, they'll get the recession. And the other thing that can get the dollar down is a stock market crash because foreign money, 40% of equities are owned by foreigners. And if you look at the global market cap for all of the international exchanges, the U.S. is like way top heavy.
Yep.
Historically, it hasn't reverted to the mean. And the reason why is over the last 10 years, the only stock market that's really done well is the U.S. It's like, it's kind of weird. It's like Europe and China and Japan, their stock markets have not done well for the last 10 years. The U.S. has done extremely well. I mean, 650 to 6,000. I mean, our stock market is straight up. So nobody else is even close to us. And so all this foreign money's come in. So if you do get that rug pull, then the dollar will go down. But unless you get the rug pull, the dollar stays high because all that money stays in the stock market. So you only have two ways to get the dollar down. There's some other ways, but two really legitimate ways. Is one, you get the stock market to crash and money pulls out of the U.S., or they fire Powell and lower rates. Those are really the only two ways that I can see.
Yeah. Let's assume for a second that they fire Powell. Wouldn't that be, that would get the dollar down, but I could see equities tanking after that as well, just because of opinion.
It's the old catch-22. You could, if you cut rates, you're going to create more inflation. You create more inflation, you create probably a worse problem.
Yeah.
It's like, it's the old Hobson's choice. It's like you only have bad choices.
Yeah.
So what's happening today is that we've been living off of debt since 2000. coming out of the 90s, the U.S. economy literally was living, was working on its own. We had a balanced budget in 98, and we had growth. But that was it. 98 is when this economy peaked. But since then, we've had 25 years of basically a Potemkin economy that we've been managing. Mm-hmm. I mean, you go back to Bernanke. Bernanke was kind of the first QE guy. He's the guy that created the bubble in housing. He was that original QE to the max kind of guy.
Yeah.
And then he was the guy that was there in 2007 and 2008 when we adopted MMT. So Bernanke, in some respects, I mean, they put him on the Time Matter cover of Time Magazine, called him the Master of the Universe. When in actuality, he destroyed the economy. It was the exact opposite. Von Mises, he would have basically been cringing on these choices that we were making in the early 2000s. It's cringing, going, oh man, you don't realize what you've done here. You don't know the damage that you've actually done. I actually believe that when this economy does finally, when this 15-year bull market ends and the economy goes in recession, I really believe that we will not recover. That's what debt bubbles do. When debt bubbles finally do pop, they just eviscerate everything. And that's what's coming. When I say we're not going to recover, I mean in our current financial system. For instance, I think that the bond market, the U.S. is going to end up defaulting on its debt, which is going to create a reset of some type. The U.S. dollar is going to get reset. Our banking system is going to get reset. In other words, we're going to end up with a new financial system. That's my belief. So in other words, this isn't going to be your dad's recession or your dad's business cycle. This is going to be a whole new animal. And that's the reason why gold has a floor under it, because people can see this, that things are teetering and that it won't take much to literally for the house of cards to roll over. The mainstream media, everybody's saying everything is great. For instance, I watch the CNBC halftime show every morning. When I wake up, I tape it and I stretch in the morning. I'm an old man now, so I got to stretch. And I stretch in the morning and I watch it the first 10 minutes, and I usually have three, four, what they call the committee members. And they're all bullish. They all run money. And today, I mean, it was unbelievable how bullish they are. I'm all bulled up. I mean, I heard that twice. I'm bulled up. Because, Judge, I'm bulled up. What do you mean saying I'm? And the only one that's, I mean, none of them think that there's any problems. Everybody thinks everything's rosy on mainstream media. You have to go outside of mainstream media to people like me, Luke Grohman, Druckenmiller, Jeremy Grantham, some of these other voices that are talking about this instability. That, I mean, Jeremy Grantham, as far as he's concerned, he considers this the most dangerous stock market in his lifetime. And he's been around a while.
Yeah. Right. Well, let's talk about the gold and silver stocks, maybe not specifically, but as a whole. We had a really good mini crash, really in the start of November, probably just right before the election. And I use it a great time to add to some of my favorite names. What's your opinion on that? And do you think that the most recent weakness, really since maybe mid-November through December, was just tax loss selling? And how do you view this pullback?
Yeah, so I'm a long-term investor. I don't believe that you should invest in gold and silver miners for 12 to 24 months, 1 to 2 years. I just don't think it works. I just think it's too volatile. You mentioned there's many corrections. So in October, we had the HUI all the way up to 350. And today it traded down to 270. It traded down, I saw it 275. And that closed it a little higher. It closed at 275 today. So we went from 350 to 275. Definitely a correction and opportunity to buy. And I've actually been buying. And so I'm a long term. Like a lot of people, why accumulate. So I accumulate. I actually did two videos. You go to my YouTube channel where I went over the producers that I own, and it was 70 stocks, and it was an hour video. And then I went over all the developers I own, and there was 50 of those. So I go over 120 names in 2 hours. And so those are the two areas that I have the most conviction for that I think have the best risk reward. And so I go over them. So I show you the ones that I have the highest conviction on. So it's some Christmas present for you guys. And so, yeah, I've been buying the dip here, buying opportunities. And that's what I do. I'm like a collector of stocks. So I have, there's 120 right there. A collector. So what I do is I accumulate. I'm not a trader at all. I don't trade. I don't think in terms of 12 to 24 months. I think in terms of 3 to 5 years. When I buy a stock, it's 3 to 5 years. You got to be patient in this business, in this sector. I'm a speculator. I'm just accumulating these stocks because I don't know which ones are going to work. It's almost impossible. There's so many unknowns. You just don't know. A good example is like Victoria Gold. I mean, it looked like a really good stock, a really good property, and they had a slip on their leach pad, and it went bankrupt. Just like that, snap of a finger. So you just never know what's going to happen. So what I do, I just use low allocations, 0.25% to 1%, and accumulate stocks, accumulate shares, and then wait for $4,000 gold. And I believe we're going to get $4,000 gold. So that's what I'm investing for, targets. So if you take $4,000 gold and you put a 40 to 1 GSR, which is what we had in 2011, we had a 39. So if you take 4,000, you put a 40 on it, you get $100 silver. Most people think $100 silver, you're crazy. There's no way. Well, in 2011, we had a 39 GSR. I see no reason why we're not going to have one again. So I think $4,000 gold and $100 silver are legitimate targets. And that's what I invest for long term. But yeah, right now, I like to buy when the HUI, which is an index for the majors, when the HUI is below 250, that's when I like to buy. I consider 250 the neutral zone. And when it goes above 250, I pause, I kind of slow down. But the only reason I've been aggressive now is because I feel this is the last opportunity, last chance. But over this 5-year period, when we went over 250, I really slowed down because I just didn't feel like we're breaking out here. And we went over 300 a few times, and every time we went all the way back under 200. We were under 200 on the HUI in October. And we were under 200 again in February. And that's when you load the boat. For me, I use the HUI. So 250 is kind of my neutral area. Below 250 is kind of a buy opportunity. Below 225 is aggressive. And then below 200 is a load the boat area. So that's kind of what I use. But I've been more aggressive lately from 250 to 350. I will not buy above 350. I won't. That's my cutoff zone, 350. And we actually touched it. And so I'm buying now below 350. I'll be a buyer until we get above 350.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the actual metals, gold and silver. You just mentioned 4,000 gold and $100 silver. Do you see that? And again, this is who knows what the future holds, right? But do you see that in the next 12 to 18 months? Is that something you're expecting?
No. So we're not just going to go straight up. No. So next year I'm expecting gold 3,200 to 3,400.
Okay.
And I don't expect the GSR to squeeze all the way down, all the way down to that. So if we use, I'm going to just do some math and do say 60. So it would be 53. So if you go to $3,200 gold, and that's kind of where I expect to go, $3,200 to $3,400. So if we get to $3,200 gold, we should see $50 silver. At a 60 GSR, it's 53.
Okay.
Next year, I would expect to see somewhere between $40 and $60 silver. and gold 3,200 to 3,400. It's kind of my target. We'll see how that lands. If I end up being right, then 2026, I think that's when we see some really high levels. That's when you could see 4,000 in 2026 and silver potentially touching 100. So, but not next year. Next year, I'm kind of in the 40 to 60 silver and 3,200, 3,400 gold.
Got it. Yeah, you know, I kind of see it as, I would agree with you. It's like I tell people, we really don't want things to go parabolic all at once because there's like so many implications if it does. There's a lot of instability just in general, and it certainly might. But it's also, that's just not a good healthy market when things go parabolic. So I like your answer is what I'm trying to say in your projections. I really like that. And just use weakness to accumulate. And then if you are a trader, if they're shorter terms than you are, you sell maybe a quarter of your position or up to a half of your position into strength. But obviously don't do that. You have to depend on what your personality is. Any other final thoughts here going into 25? What do people have to look out for? And yeah, what do you want to leave our viewers with?
I think going into next year is a lot of unknowns. So it's really hard to have high conviction with so much uncertainty. For instance, I talked about the possibility that we could muddle all year. We could just get stuck in a trading range and things don't break down. Especially the first half of the year, I think that's a good possibility. But the last 2 years, that's kind of what's happened. We've kind of when we were strong the first half of the year, and then we held. There was a sell off in September of 23, but it was bought in October. It didn't last. It was a very short. That was the last correction we've had was September of 23. It's been a long time. The last 10% correction was in September of 23. Believe it or not. So we're going to have a 10% correction in the first half of this year. I really believe that. I think the odds of a 10% correction in the first half of the year are probably at least 80%, maybe 90%. But the key is, what does the market do after that correction? Does it throw in the towel and say, this is it? Are we going to have some type of a black swan that kind of pushes everything downward? I don't know. I do think that oil prices are going to help the economy in the first half of the year. I don't see oil just ripping to $100. I think the war in Ukraine is going to end, which is going to put some downward pressure on oil. And so oil is going to help the economy, but inflation is not going to tick up, but it's going to stay high, which probably, in other words, mortgage rates are going to stay high. So you're going to have a lot of weakness in the economy. But simultaneous to that, you're also going to have factors that kind of keep it from crashing. So the first half of this year, there's tons of uncertainty. It's really hard to have high conviction of what's going to happen the first half of the year. But I don't have high conviction we're going to melt the David Hunter. We're going to melt up. I just think there's too many headwinds, and I don't have high conviction we're going to crash. So from that standpoint, I see it as a buying opportunity for miners. Again, I'm buying here below 350 on the HUI. So, and I think this is the last chance to buy. So I've been buying for 20 years. I've been, like I said, I mentioned 120 stocks there. Those have been accumulated over 20 years. I've been slowly, slowly accumulating. And I feel like this is it. If I want to own any more stocks, better accumulate now. One final thing on that is, my favorite way to invest is buying to the bottom. So now what does that mean? I buy the bottom and sell the top. In order to do that, you have to pick a bottom or pick a top. And so every stock, I'll give you an example, is like Newmont. Newmont's at 38. I can pick a bottom with Newmont. It traded at $30 in February. I don't think we're going back to 30. So I don't think 30 is the bottom. I would put the bottom at 33. So I would buy Newmont today if I didn't own it. I'd buy it, and let's say I wanted a three-bagger. I'd buy it at 38, and then I would wait. If it went to 35, I'd buy more, and then if it went to 33, I'd buy more. That's buying to the bottom. That's my favorite way to best. And then you sell, when you sell to the top, you pick a top. So for me, the top on Newlont would be at least 150, at least. So I wouldn't sell anything below 150. And then once it got to 150, maybe I only sell half and I put a 20% stop loss and let it stop out on its own. So you, that's how you do it. You, when you buy to sell to the bottom, you pick the bottom for each stock, and you have to have high conviction. So I have high conviction 33, and then you pick a top and you have high conviction with that, and then you sell to it. And you can do that with each individual company.
Got it. Speaking of Newmont, I just picked up some Newmont today.
Smart guy. So now buy to the bottom.
Oh,
35 and 33.
Well, it's funny you mentioned those price zones too, because I was looking at 33. I was like, well, let's keep all our average in here. I was going to split the difference around 35, but then, which is 35. I was like, and I saw 33 as a bottom. So yeah, I put on a position, which Newmont I've traded in and out of over the last several years. And it's one of my favorite stocks to trade. But it got so cheap today. I'm like, this is a $50+ stock.
It's trading at 82 or 84 in 21.
Yeah, 3 years ago. Yeah.
So, no, it's going to rip back next year. If we go to $3,000 gold, it will trade north of 60 and may probably north of 70.
Yeah. And that's a bit, and it's just like the case for the big players. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think it trickles down, meaning the big players, the big stocks will move first, and then it'll go the small ones, the explorers and the juniors. So, Don, people want to do business with you. How do they get to you? And see it on your screen there. But
so my website is for people that already own gold and silver mining stocks. So I want you to do this data. I want you to do your own research. I do give you leads, but I want you to do the due diligence on those stocks. If you don't own any miners, but you think maybe I should be interested in these things, the first thing you want to do is read my book. So you go to Amazon and look for my gold and silver book. It'll be easy to find. And it's the only book out there that teaches you how to analyze gold and silver mining stocks. It's a textbook. It's like 300 pages long. And then you can follow me on Substack and Twitter. Just search Don Durrett. But thanks for having me on, Andy.
Yeah, I'll link to all of that as well as to your YouTube channel. So, there's some nuggets, a lot of really good nuggets for people there. Don, it's always great to see you. I hope to see you again very soon.
Yeah. Let's say April. How's April sound?
April sounds great. I'll be there. Take care. Thank you.